Welcome to the Sleaze Cast with Doc Sleaze.
Are we alone? You sure? Nobody their ear to the door? Nobody hiding behind your chair? Okay. Because now it's just you and me. I think it's time we talked about conspiracies. Absolutely. Well, to be more accurate, conspiracy theories. That's what we're going to be concerning ourselves with in this edition of the Sleazecast. Conspiracy theories. Where do they come from? Who perpetuates them? Who believes in them? What's it all about? So, without further ado, here we go. Sleazecast. Conspiracy theory. If you read the Sleaze regularly, get the plug in there, sleaze.co.uk. You'll know that I've quite an interest in conspiracy theories, frequently parodying them in stories there, and basically seeing how bizarre a conspiracy theory I can come up with based on apparently innocuous events in the news or wherever. Before we go any further, I really put my cards on the table here. Despite an interest in conspiracy theories, I am not a conspiracy theorist myself. Personally, I don't actually believe there's all these secret conspiracies going on out there. One of the biggest flaws with the idea behind most of these big conspiracy theories is that they would have to involve so many people being involved. They would never, the details of them, would never remain secret for very long, because it's the very nature of huge organisations where lots of people are involved that somebody inevitably talks about it. They leak. There's always weak links. And if a conspiracy is truly all-encompassing works its way into all aspects of our lives, then by its very nature it can't be contained to just a few people. You know, it's not just like, you know, Blofeld from Spectre running it all on his own and nobody else knows the details. There'd be too many people would need to know too many details. Nevertheless, the whole phenomena of the conspiracy theory does fascinate me, because they form a kind of alternate history for people who, for whatever reason, aren't satisfied with actual history. They create their own version of it. Now, as someone who's something of an historian themselves, I mean, my first degree is a joint honours degree, politics and history, and I've taught history before now. So I know that the actual study of history is about facts, historical facts. And I'm not going to get into the whole discussion of what constitutes an historical fact. If you want to know that, read E.H. Carr's book, What is History? Very good book, recommend it. But accepting there are such things as historical facts, what the study of history is about is interpreting those facts. Now, it doesn't mean you can interpret them any way you like. Often what it means really is new facts are uncovered, which leads you to reinterpret the existing facts in the light of these. Well, that's the point. History is always fact-based. Conspiracy theories, however, seek to ignore the facts which are inconvenient on the basis that they are false and placed there by the conspirators. Also, conspiracy theories like to bring in their own facts, so to speak. They like to use hearsay as sources rather than actual fact. They like to ignore the existence of actual documentation, because of course documentation, that can't be a fact, because it's been fabricated by the conspiracy again, by the establishment, which is always part of the conspiracy. I'll give you an example. There's a conspiracy theory that you may have encountered some of its manifestations. The idea about the Hollow Earth. I'm talking specifically about the version of it that says that towards the end of World War II, lots of top-ranking Nazis and SS officers and the like were taken by U-boat down to the South Pole, where they were able to enter the Hollow Earth via this hole at the south, which exists apparently at the South Pole. There's apparently an entrance there, according to the sort of people who believe that, which leads you into the Hollow Earth. There's lots of those, like the Atlanteans and whatever. That's where they lived. You know, I mean, it's a long-standing idea. You may have encountered it through watching such films as At the Earth's Core, which was from based on a series of Edgar Rice Burroughs novels and stories, which popularised that idea. It's an idea that doesn't have, you know, obviously because of advances in scientific knowledge and so on, obviously it's not as wide known or widely held today, this theory. Anyway, getting back to the Nazis at the South Pole, there's this story that they were setting up a Fourth Reich in the Hollow Earth at the South Pole. Now, that's the starting point for a conspiracy theory, which I came across once. That also, after World War II, I can't remember, it was the late 1940s, early 50s, the US Navy launched an expedition to the South Pole, to the Antarctic. And we talk expedition, it involved a huge number of ships, including an aircraft carrier, under the command of Admiral Byrd, the famous polar explorer. And according to this conspiracy theory, what this fleet basically was doing, it went down there to fight these Nazis. Okay, apparently there were some huge battle with the Nazis on the ice. There were various American casualties. There's stories of according to this theory, the people who believe in this, there are stories of American sailors coming back from this with serious burns and being treated and whatever, and the whole thing was covered up because they didn't want to panic the American public. Now, for a start here, let's be honest, would it really be possible to cover something like that up, you know, or if it involved, you know, thousands of men, you know, involved in pitched battles in the ice with the Nazis? Somehow I think someone would talk to the papers. That's flaw number one of this theory. Flaw number two is that actually there's a lot of documentation of this expedition in US official archives. Okay, I know it's all been fabricated, but it was quite simply the US Navy post-World War II, obviously, was facing, this is before the Cold War really took its grip. They wanted to prove that they still had a purpose and could mount these huge operations. Obviously, it's pre-Korea as well, Korea War. They could launch these huge amphibious operations. And they had a peacetime role, doing something other than shooting people and sinking other people's ships and whatever. And this expedition was to chart parts of Antarctica, because obviously there's also an economic interest here with ice minerals or whatever under the Antarctic ice. Various countries lay claim to it. The UK for one, Argentina for another. Yeah, we all lay claim to bits and pieces of the Antarctic. And that's what this expedition was all about. Now, interestingly, there were casualties. A spotter plane crashed, killing its crew. They were the only casualties, apart from the odd bit of frostbite and whatever. Apparently, there were no Nazis encountered. But all this documentation of it is conveniently ignored by the people who want to believe the Hollow Earth Nazi theory. I mean, this, as I say, I mean, the evidence, you know, the actual official documentation is all there, quite easily accessible. You can find bits on the web. And yet, the conspiracy theory version of this story persists. And you'll see it reported as fact in some places. I say it's become an alternate history of something that's still within living memory, interestingly. So there you have, you know, as a first example, the wild world of conspiracy theories, of how real events get co-opted into this conspiracy and forced to fit the theory, which of course is the opposite of what you're meant to be doing. In history, as even with the natural sciences. Your theory should flow from the facts, basically. You come up with a theory that can explain the facts. You don't force the facts into a theory. But that's what conspiracy theory is about. But having established that conspiracy theories co-opt actual events and persons into their web of often paranoia, how easy is it to do this? I mean, let's have a try. Let's try something simple. Richard Branson. Again, if you read The Sleaze or Sleaze Diary regularly, you know I can't stand him. But Richard Branson has been in the news a bit over the past few months. Several different things. So let's take two unconnected, apparently unconnected events involving Richard Branson and put them together to make a conspiracy theory. You might remember some months ago, a few weeks ago rather, Richard Branson bought from the government the Northern Rock Bank, at least part of it, at a knockdown price. Remember, this is the bank that we as taxpayers bailed out. It's one of the banks that helped precipitate the economic crisis in the UK, and basically it's bailed out with taxpayers' money. Now, George Osborne has sold it to Branson, or rather Branson's company, Virgin, for Virgin Money, for a lot less than the amount that we bailed them out for. So we've actually made a loss on this. So Branson's got a bank on the cheap, which it's alleged he'll no asset strip. Now, seems straightforward enough. Straightforward business transaction. Now, let's go back a bit further. A few months ago, you might remember as well, Richard Branson, he was in the news when his house out in the West Indies, was it, or the Caribbean somewhere, burned down. You might remember it. It was in the news, Richard Branson having to run naked from a blazing house, at least that was his story. and the actress Kate Winslet apparently rescuing his elderly mother from the blaze. All the papers. Now, let's put these two things together. Where did Branson get the money to buy, even at a knockdown price, a bank? Could it be from the insurance payout from his house burning down? So there we go. See, we already have the bare bones just by yoking together two unconnected events in the life of one person. We have a little mini conspiracy theory here. Branson burns his own house down to collect the insurance to buy a bank on the cheap from the government. As conspiracies go, it's not a biggie, but it illustrates the point. Let's embellish it a bit more. What evidence do we have that he might have started the fire? Well, this is where we can start leaving the realm of fact behind, beginning to bend, because this is what you do with a conspiracy theory. Let's add in there's some mysterious unnamed eyewitness, this is something that's reported, when Kate Winslet was rescuing Branson's mother from the flames, saw Richard Branson running up to her, trying to stop her and trying to shove his mother back into the blazing building, shouting, "My God, you stupid woman, don't you know how much I've got the old bat insured for?" Absolutely ridiculous, I hasten to add. Obviously, Richard Branson would not do that. But there we have a little bit of embellishment. From an unattributable source, as is usually the case. So it wasn't just the house now. It was his own bloody mother, he's insured, in order to buy this bank. Okay, it's still all a fairly minor conspiracy theory as they go. Just involves a bit of avarice, man wanting to own a bank on the cheap. But let's take it a stage further. Let's take it all a stage further. Would Branson have been able to buy a bank like Northern Rock before the financial crash? Probably not. But bearing in mind he's big in business and so on, he has this arm of his company Virgin Money, could it be that he's part of a cabal of businessmen who deliberately engineered the whole financial crash to devalue some of these institutions so they could buy them all on the cheap, thereby increasing their power, their wealth, their influence. So there you go, we've gone already. So a few stages there from, you know, two facts. Man's house burned down, man buys bank, to a full-blown conspiracy theory that is beginning to have international ramifications. See how easy it is. So, conspiracy theories. Who actually subscribes to them? I mean, that's the other big question. What sort of person believes in conspiracy theories? Well, in my experience of encountering the real hardcore conspiracy nuts, whatever you want to call them, I don't want to sound too disparaging, on the web, mainly, in my main encounters with them. In a way, it's a quasi-religious thing. It gives them this feeling, I feel, this is based entirely upon my reading of their message boards and of sort of discussions I've had with people into conspiracies. It gives them this feeling they are somehow party to secret knowledge, and this makes them special, basically. It feels they are part of the cognoscenti. The rest of us are ignorant. We can't see these conspiracies, as far as they're concerned, or we just dismiss them. And they are the cognoscenti. They're like a priesthood, if you like, of the conspiracy. They're holders of the truth, keepers of the flame. That's the way they see it, rather the way ancient religions used to be kept going. That's one part of it, I feel. Another big part of it is, like any belief system or ideology, and I think conspiracy theories to a certain extent can be considered ideologies and belief systems, they reassure again in that they provide answers for people to difficult questions and difficult situations, things they're worried about. In the past, people relied entirely upon, it seemed, religion to tell them what they needed to think and to reassure them in this terrible changing world we live in. So we sound like a Paul McCartney lyric there. Yeah, the turbulent conditions in which we live, the many things over which we seem to have no control whatsoever. And in the past, we might describe, well, you know, God moves in mysterious ways, put your faith in the Lord. But I think, I mean, that's not to say there haven't been conspiracy theories in the past. I dare say back in the days of ancient Greece and Rome, whatever, you had conspiracy theorists. But I think why they're particularly popular these days, because of the weakening of belief in religion, and because we do live in particularly turbulent times. Things we once thought certain no longer seem certain. And the conspiracy theory is another way of reassuring people. Again, we have the answers here. It's like this because XYZ. It's, you know, because the Jews behind, or whatever it happens to be the particular scapegoat for a particular conspiracy you subscribe to. As I say, reassures them. It provides a nice, stable worldview in which everything is explained in terms of this conspiracy. I think another aspect, another attraction of the conspiracy theory is, again, like an ideology or any other belief system or religion perhaps, it helps you, the individual, to deny a degree of personal responsibility in that, you know, your life could be terrible, ruined by economic conditions and what, or whatever, you know, economic downturn or a change in political leadership at the top of government. These things could have huge effects on your life or whatever. Or your own actions could, you make bad choices and you end up in a situation you didn't want to be in. But again, if you subscribe to a conspiracy theory, it explains all this. It's not my fault. It was all down to this conspiracy. They were the ones who did it, not me, basically. Yeah, basically, it's a way for some people, I'm not saying all conspiracies are like this, but it enables them to not take responsibility for some of their own actions or inactions in their lives. It explains their situation in purely external terms. It's outside forces, not them, who are entirely shaping their misfortunes. And I think that's a very big part of the attraction for certain people in the whole conspiracy theory business. But also, of course, on a broader level, it's the whole I touched on before. It provides an alternative history. For whatever reason, you know, some people just don't like the actual history of the world, say, of certain events, whatever it is. They think there must be more to it than that. I think it's part of this idea they can't accept sometimes that there are simple causes for huge events often. So instead, they come up again with a conspiracy theory to complicate it, saying, oh no, it's much more than that. It's much more significant than that, these events. There's a conspiracy behind it. Because, let's face it, if you don't believe in some god-like force behind the universe with intent, you know, basically manipulating events or shaping events with some intent, good intent, evil intent, or whatever, or you don't believe that everything's being manipulated by some cabal, the Bilderberg group, whoever, or some big conspiracy which is shaping events, then what are you left with? You're left with the view that the universe ultimately is quite random. There is no guiding force behind it, no good or evil. These are all things within ourselves. And so you're left with the idea, which a lot of people find very, very frightening, is that basically things just happen. There doesn't have to be rhyme or reason behind them. They just happen. The universe doesn't care about us. We are tiny and insignificant in the huge scheme of things. But of course, the conspiracy theory, like religion, says, oh no, it's not all random. We're not at the mercy of random events and cosmic forces, uncaring cosmic forces which aren't imbued with intelligence or sentience, who aren't driven by emotion, by hate, by love, or whatever. They're just forces of nature, things that happen. And for many people, that seems very scary. Instead, they'd rather believe that there's this group of evil men, or the Jews, or the communists, or whatever, lying behind these events, manipulating things, shaping events. Then you can cast yourself then. You, again, we're back to the personal responsibility. You are, even if you aren't in charge of your own life, your own destiny, you're actually a victim, which for some people seems much preferable. Of course, we always think of conspiracies and conspiracy theories as concerning big political events or historical events, you know, the Kennedy assassination, or the death of Hitler. You know, he didn't die really; he was shipped off to South America, or to that hollow earth land beneath the South Pole, depending on your particular preferences. But of course, conspiracies can concern anything. I mean, there's a lot of very popular showbiz conspiracies, and most of them dealing with popular showbiz figures have actually been replaced by doubles. Of these, probably the best known, and one of my favourites, is the Paul is dead conspiracy. You know, that Paul McCartney died in 1966 or 67 and was replaced by a double. Now, it's always struck me as being one of those pointless conspiracy theories I've ever come across, because you love shouting and saying, well, so what? It's hardly, even if it was true, which it isn't, it's hardly earth-shattering. You know, this isn't something that's going to really affect world events or whatever. But, it does serve a purpose for some people. For some people, find it very troublesome that the Beatles apparently suddenly changed musical direction with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in about 67. And, you know, before that, there were all these lovely mop-top boys with their suits and singing She Loves Me, yeah, yeah, all that, I Just Want to Hold Your Hand, all these sort of typical 60s love songs and romantic songs, pop songs. And suddenly they grow facial hair, start wearing weird uniforms and go and take huge and ingest huge amounts of drugs and come up with Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And also, not only does it explain it for them, for these people who don't like this, also then they can reduce all the subsequent output, which they don't really like, truth be told, to the level of being merely a puzzle, in which it's simply a series of clues about how Paul died and was replaced. I find it rather sad that people want to reduce the creative output of possibly the world's greatest pop group to that level. But there you go. I mean, and like all conspiracy theories, not only is it based upon very scant evidence, this one has its origins in I believe, a radio hoax of some kind. A radio rumour, rather, put up by an American DJ. They come with all this scant sort of stuff to back it up of clues, allegedly, in album covers and God knows what else. And lyrics and whatever. All nonsense. But, lost my thread a bit there. as I say, it reduces, I mean, it's very sad that they do this, it reduces it this level. But what it is, it's based upon this fallacy of this sudden change in musical direction. Anybody who really is a Beatles fan, and trust me, I grew up with them, you know, I am a child of the 60s. I'm not that old, I was very young at the time, but my sister was a huge fan. And I grew up from a very early age listening to the Beatles. They were in the constant background to my earliest years. I felt like members of the family, in fact. I felt I knew them so well growing up. The reality is that that change wasn't a sudden one that came with Sgt. Pepper. You can see it coming all the way through albums like Rubber Soul and Revolver. It's a clear progression through those albums to Sgt. Pepper. There isn't this huge disjuncture. Again, it's based upon this fallacy. And basically, created, as I say, by people who don't like change, basically. And you'll find that with virtually all the other showbiz conspiracies about showbiz figures being replaced, is to try and explain a perceived change in their creative output or their behaviour, whatever. And part of that stems not just from disliking change, but I think also from the rather sinister side of things, that there are many fans who feel almost they own the objects of their affection, and you know they're not allowed them, these people, these celebrities, to change or do anything different without the fans' permission. It's seen as a betrayal somehow, and obviously, you know, the celebrity they love wouldn't do that, they reason, at some level. Therefore, they must have been replaced by an evil double. That, I think, is a large part of the motivation behind things like the whole Paul is dead nonsense. But there you go. I mean, I've had a lot of fun, I must admit, with the Paul is dead thing over on the Sleaze. I've written several stories based around it, and that's how I came to encounter some of the nutters who are devoted to this theory, if we can grace it with such a term. And they do get very upset when you take the mickey out of them, because part of it is, of course, you're popularizing their particular theory, and you know, they think they're the cognoscenti, and God forbid anyone who tries to popularize that bring it to a wider audience and take the piss. They especially don't like some of my theories about how Paul allegedly died, you know. Things like, you know, he died whilst being, you know, having sex simultaneously with 17 groupies or whatever. He had a fatal heart attack, that sort of thing. They really don't like that. But, you know, trust me, you know, Paul is live. I mean, the only big mystery surrounding Sir Paul McCartney these days is, bearing in mind he's nearly 70, you know, is that a wig? I mean, because, come on, like, you know, I mean, these days people past the age of 60 or 70, well, actually look a lot better than they did when I was a kid, but a lot more youthful. But I mean, come on, I'm sorry, I refuse to believe that's his real hair colour still to this day. So come on, Paul, you know, reveal the secret there. Was your hair replaced? And if so, when? did it coincide with a change of creative direction? Perhaps not. Because conspiracy theories aren't just the realm of lone nutters or these small groups of conspiracy theorists. Yeah, they're not solely an underground phenomena. When it suits them, the establishment, of course, is very fond of conspiracy theories. When it suits them, it diverts attention, public attention, from the real issues, the real culprits behind behind economic collapses, bad political decisions, wars breaking out, whatever. I mean, one could argue the whole run-up to the Iraq War, the invasion of Iraq. We had a whole conspiracy theory going there about Saddam Hussein and his non-existent weapons of mass production, about how he was planning, he had these secret labs building plants, building these weapons which he was going to use against us in the West, how he had missiles that could reach the United Kingdom or whatever. All nonsense, all an elaborate conspiracy theory, one might argue, in order to persuade Parliament and the electorate to support an unpopular war. That's one example. As I've alluded to earlier, of course, as well, conspiracy theories often have a scapegoat, not just Saddam Hussein, perhaps, but I've mentioned it before, the Jews. Jews are very often a scapegoat for conspiracies. And again, that's another one which often suits the establishment. To say, oh, it's the Jews behind it all, these evil people. Because, of course, I mean, if you go back not even that far in history, financiers tended to be Jewish. They had money, which often the powers that be wanted to get their hands on, basically. And one way to do that was to discredit the Jews by saying they were evil and everything, and therefore justifying confiscating their assets. Very popular one, the old Jewish conspiracy theories. Again, all nonsense. But, you know, as I say, didn't stop the Third Reich being built on the basis of it. And I say, still turns up to this day. Remember Mel Gibson? I don't know how you forget, but I mean specifically when he had that that unfortunate incident when he was stopped, was it for drink driving? And not only did he call the female deputy sugar tits, but then went into that rant about how, you know, was it the fucking Jews are behind all the wars or something? But then I thought, well, I've actually heard another theory that, in fact, that's wrong. I mean, to be fair to Mel, he didn't say Jews, he was misheard. He said shoes. He said the fucking shoes behind all the wars. Because Mel Gibson, if you read the right websites, you'd know, is apparently a foot fetishist, allegedly. And he has this thing that he believes that feet shouldn't be constrained by shoes all the time. And he believes that ill-fitting shoes are indeed behind many, many of the world's ills. Because, you know, if your shoes don't fit properly and they ache and they're painful, it puts you in this really family. I mean, just look at those. Let's look at the Third Reich. Look at all those bloody stormtroopers. Wore those jack boots. Very, very narrow at the toes and on the instep. I mean, you know, that's to put them in permanent pain. I mean, was it any wonder they're running around committing atrocities all the time? And of course, as Mel would tell you, of course, go back to the Roman Empire, the Romans. They wore sandals, so they didn't have all these foot problems. They built this vast empire, and they crucified a lot of Jews. Okay, we've looked at how conspiracy theories might come about. We've looked at the whys and wherefores, the kind of people who believe in them, the kind of people who create them. We'll look to the lighter side a little bit. We've also mentioned, this is what I come back to now, that sometimes it's convenient for the establishment to use conspiracies, to disseminate conspiracy theories. So I'd like to propose an idea here. What if all those conspiracy theories out there, you know, the moon landings were fake, all the conspiracies surrounding the Kennedy assassination, you know, Bilderberg group, Paul is dead, God knows what else, you know, Johnny Morris was a Nazi. What if all of those were actually created by the powers that be as a distraction from the real conspiracy? Think about it. We're spending all our time running around, investigating these, chasing down clues on these things and whatever. It leaves the field clear for the real conspiracy to be carried out. Because nobody's looking. We're all looking to see, you know, trying to find out who this Paul McCartney impersonator is, who's been pretending to be Paul since 1967 or whatever it is, looking for clues in I Am the Walrus. I mean, is that so far-fetched? Is it such a crazy idea? Digression, I mean, the purpose of which will become clear, because Richard Condon, the late Richard Condon, American novelist, writer, probably best known for writing The Manchurian Candidate and Pritzi's Honor. He wrote the novels, both those were made into successful films, case of The Manchurian Candidate twice. But he also wrote another novel, which was filmed, called Winter Kills. And it's a very interesting novel. And the film, if I remember, had Jeff Bridges in it. And it's actually very little seen. Didn't get much of a release. And I believe I can only recall it being shown on television once. Anyway, the point about Winter Kills is that it's a fictionalised account of an investigation into the Kennedy assassination. It's about the assassination of a fictional American president and his brother's one of his younger brothers' subsequent investigation of this. And basically, in the course of investigation, both the book and the film, he goes through all the popular conspiracies theories to do with it and tries to sort of find evidence for them. And every time he sort of proves one to be false, suddenly new evidence mysteriously appears to send him off in another direction to another conspiracy surrounding his brother's assassination. And I don't give any too many spoilers, but it transpires that the villain of the piece, I won't spoil it for you, has employed this guy, I think he's a former academic, I remember it was Anthony Perkins played him in the film, who basically spends all his time sat in a room, basically, devising convincing sounding conspiracy theories to explain away, to surround and obfuscate the assassination of this president. Basically, to lead people down the wrong path, to lead them away from the truth. And that's what this guy does. He just sits in this room, comes up with these things, these ideas, passes them on, they're disseminated. Sound far-fetched? I'm not so sure. I mean, today, especially today, it's rather ahead of time of the day. Nowadays, with the internet, much, much easier to disseminate these such ideas, this disinformation. Maybe that's another conspiracy. The internet itself was created by the military-industrial complex simply as a means of disseminating disinformation. Think on that. But what is this big conspiracy they're all covering up? Maybe it's a conspiracy that lies in plain sight. Most of these conspiracy theories, they come down to the idea there's like cabals or you know, the Illuminati or Freemasons or the Jews or someone behind the scenes manipulating things. But just stop and think for a minute. The reality is in our world that something like 99% of the wealth in our Western society is owned by only 1% of the population. And it's not just the wealthy, and thanks to the wealthy, they own the power. They own the press. Certainly here in this country, they own the press. They can actually manipulate what the news is, what news you read, the way it's framed. Yes? They can try to influence your attitudes, your ideas. And go back again a little bit, remember we talked about that conspiracy about Richard Branson burning his own house down to get the insurance money to pay for buying Northern Rock Bank. Okay, it's just a bit of frivolity, a bit of fun. Let's think about this, shall we? What's been happening in the wake of this a financial crisis? What we've seen in some countries, places like Berlusconi in Italy and Papandreou in Greece, democratically elected leaders being replaced by unelected technocrats. Yeah? Democracy, it seems, is being severely restrained. What do we have in this country? A right-wing government with at its head a man with lots of connections to the city and bankers, same with most of his cabinet. What are they doing? They're trying to strip away workers' rights. They're trying to alter the constitution, aren't they? So they basically have a fixed 5-year term in power. They're trying to, through boundary changes, basically give themselves, their party, a built-in electoral advantage, it could be argued. So basically, bearing in mind that democracy can actually be very bad for business as far as these top 1% are concerned, because after all, what do democratic governments do? The bastards, they introduce labour legislation to stop you exploiting your workers and forcing to actually pay them. They place restrictions upon you. They try and regulate you so that you can't do things like insider dealing, this sort of thing, to make vast profits immorally. So is it such a stretch to think perhaps these are the people who actually themselves precipitated the financial crisis through the banks and financial institutes? There, did they do it deliberately so that they could then, knowing we go down this path of austerity and, you know, financial chaos, which could lead to restrictions on democracy, putting, they'd be able to put their own people in the top positions, the technocrats, who aren't beholden to the people, but seem to have lots of links to these wealthy 1%. Maybe that's the real conspiracy they want to distract us all from. Think on it. It's no more wild and crazy than thinking, you know, the moon landings were faked on a beach in Weston-super-Mare. So I'll leave you with that thought. Maybe the real conspiracy is there in plain sight for us all to see.
That was the Sleaze Cast, a Sleaze Multimedia production, featuring Doc Sleaze. Announcer Susie Sleaze. Produced by Doc Sleaze for the Sleaze.